Welcome to the Title League Podcast. I'm your host, Kurt.
And I'm Trish.
And today we're joined by NBA guard Charlotte Hornets, Dwayne Bacon.
We actually had Dwayne's mom, Kenny Crawford, on one of our sister shows, Courtside Moms, and she told their remarkable story. If you want to hear a rags-to-riches kind of upbringing, Dwayne Bacon probably started further away from the NBA than anybody else that we've interviewed or that we've talked to on this podcast. And it made me start thinking, you know, there's, with the exception of maybe Josh Okogie, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, we really only have players who come from stable homes, like normal, what you would call middle class homes, or kids that have pretty much the most instability in their upbringings. And it's amazing how both of these childhoods can produce NBA players. And it'll be interesting to hear if that had any impact, if his childhood had any impact on his ability to play or his hunger to play or what drove him. You know, we saw a video of draft night and just the reaction that he had with his mom. And obviously that's a special bond between the two of them. And again, it's not to take away from those of us. I'm one of those kids who grew up in a normal, stable, middle-class family. But it's a different story when you come from a really tough background and you're able to overcome these challenges and these struggles and end up on this huge stage.
Exactly. I mean, you look at Dwayne's his history and the upbringing in Lakeland, Florida, going to three different high schools, but ending up at Oak Hill and becoming a McDonald's All-American and committing to Florida State, you know, Florida State, where he had a phenomenal 2 years. I mean, he brought that team. That team hadn't been to the NCAA tournament in about 5 years, and he brought them there, and that's transitioned over to the league. So, you know, I'm excited to speak to him because you look at his first 3 years in the league, there's been ups, there's been downs, but the kid can ball.
Yeah, he's an amazing player. And it's, you know, he had a fantastic start. He was highly ranked out of high school. He had a great college career. And now with his 3 years with the Hornets, it's sort of been like they've forgotten about him. I don't mean disrespect, but it does feel like they've kind of forgotten that they have this amazing player on their roster who they're not using.
You know, there's only 450 players in the league, and you've got a lot of, you talk about talent. The whole world, every single basketball player wants to play in the NBA. There are so many talented individuals that never even get there. And then there are the guys that do get there, and it comes down like everything has to go right. You can be all the talent in the world, but if you don't have the right fit, the right coaching staff, the right management team, you don't play. Mm-hmm. And there's so many of those stories. And you just look at how Dwayne is being, he's being underutilized. So now that he's a free agent, and that's another thing we'll talk about, being a free agent is hard enough, but being a free agent during the coronavirus is even tougher.
Right, like when does that even start? When does he become, is he a free agent now? Do we wait until the bubble experience is over? Or does,
I mean, like, we'll find out. We'll ask him. But more importantly, I want to see him on a team that wants to utilize him. Yeah. Because he's an athletic wing. He can put the ball in the hoop. So he adds value to anyone in the NBA.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting to see where he goes and what happens next for him. You know, one thing that's interesting to me, and you are the basketball expert, but I kind of marvel at this. So we talk about the Knicks a lot and how the owner of the Knicks is a thorn in the side of that team.
James Dolan.
Right? Nobody wants to play for him. Nobody wants to work with him. But then now we're talking about the Hornets, and you have the greatest player of all time, in my opinion, who is the owner of the Hornets. Why has this team struggled for as long as they have? Why? How do you, like, if an owner, in the case of the Knicks, can mean so much to a franchise, then why can't an owner like Michael Jordan mean as much to a franchise like the Charlotte Hornets?
You know, that's a hot take because everyone's quick to blame, point the finger. And you look at the Charlotte Hornets, they haven't had success. You know, they've never really been able to land marquee free agents. You think about Michael Jordan, the greatest. He's a global icon. But at the same point, as an owner, you have to stay in your role or you have to stay in your lane, and you want to hire a management team that wants to hire a coaching staff. And I think that is where, you know, I'm sure Michael's frustrated.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he wouldn't be.
The guy is a competitor.
This is the most competitive player in league history. It's like he, But again, I'm still just curious as to why is an owner relevant in one case and not as relevant in another case?
With James Dolan, it's the fact that for the last few years, coaches, GMs, nobody's wanted to go to New York, and that's trickled down to players.
Yeah.
You saw it with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. They signed with Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah.
But everyone wants to play
Brooklyn's
in the Garden.
The new Knicks.
Exactly. And now you see Spike Lee. I mean, Spike Lee, prior to coronavirus, decided that he wasn't going to attend any more Knicks games. So there's definitely loss of influence. I think MJ he's got to be a fantastic mentor to the guys.
Yeah.
I'm sure he respects his coaching staff, his management team, and I'm sure there's a lot of pressure on them. But it'll be interesting to ask Dwayne what it's been like to have MJ as a mentor.
And maybe I won't chicken out and ask him why the team isn't better. I'll probably chicken out. Anyway, here he is now. We'll let him on.
Dwayne, welcome to the show, man. How's your day going?
It's been great. Good day so far. I ain't really got nothing to do to my workout.
How's your summer been so far? Obviously, it's not a traditional summer.
A little bit unexpected, but I mean, you know, when stuff like this happen, tragedies like this happen, I mean, you just got to go with the flow. So, I mean, nothing really I can do but keep, you know, controlling what I can control. And just got to go from there.
It's, you know, obviously it's not a traditional summer. We've got lots going on with a global pandemic. But for you, it's a big summer. I mean, you're heading into free agency. You've never been a free agent before. So you're experiencing not just free agency, but free agency amid the unknown. How have you coped with that?
There's nothing really I could do, especially right now in this free agency. Especially not right now. I was talking to my agents, and it's like they really can't talk to nobody yet because it's an awkward, like you said, it's a really weird summer. It's very awkward to where, you know, everything is going to be pushed back. So, you know, I don't even know, you know, when the free agency is going to start. And, you know, I just got to kind of wait. We got to wait. And hopefully, you know, when the season ends in Orlando, we can go from there.
And as far as competing, I mean, I know you're getting in the gym, you're working out. Are you able to get in runs? Are you able to compete? Or is it more just skills training, one-on-one?
It's a lot more skill trainings, one-on-ones. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I'm not really into the runs unless it's a real game anyway. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to play basketball. And I'll play if you know, the guys want to play or any of my friends want to play. But it's just like, especially as of right now, it's like there's really no runs to even try to get into that much. So you got to go with the flow.
And right now, you're calling in from Charlotte, right?
Yep. Right now I'm in Charlotte.
So are you, walk us through what is it like? I mean, are you still a Charlotte Hornet, or because you're a free agent, like, where do you work out? Are you working out at their facilities, or are you just using whatever you can find?
Honestly, right now, I'm still a Charlotte Hornet.
They still have a qualifying offer, right?
No, just technically my contract is still with them. So I'm not off the team yet. I think once free agency hits and, you know, all that stuff hit and we can figure out, well, you know, this is what we got to do. And now you're finally free, then I'll be free. But as of right now, I'm still on the team and I still can go in a facility. But it's just more of a thing with me is like, I went in a facility the other day and it just felt super weird. and it is no disrespect to nobody in there. It has nothing to do with nobody in there. It's just, you know, usually when I go in there, it's like I felt at home. It's like, I went in there the other day and it just felt like I didn't even, you know, belong there. And I don't want to make it weird for the other guys. But me personally, my friends on the team, I still talk to everybody on the team. Me and Devontae and Miles and PJ, we hang out every day. We still work out at the same spot. I still play ones with those guys. So it's just like, I could get my work in without bothering nobody, without making anyone feel uncomfortable, knowing that I'm not going to be here next year. Then that's what I'd rather do than going in and making it feel weird and, you know,
So we're gonna get into your high school career, and we're gonna get into obviously your childhood. Like Kurt mentioned at the start, we had the pleasure of having your mom, Kenny, on one of our sister shows, The Courtside Moms, and so we know a bit of that past, and I want to talk about that. But keeping in with free agency, I'm just curious. I wonder, is this a coronavirus free agency feeling that you're having, or if the regular season had played out the way that it did without any hiatus, would you be kind of in this limbo or in this awkwardness of training in the facility and being a Hornet but not really being a Hornet? Or do you think that, like, coronavirus and the pause that it put on the season and the uncertainty that it put on what happens next has really been a major factor in why this hasn't been a smooth transition for you into free agency?
I think it's personally difficult just because of the coronavirus. Me personally, I haven't been in the Hornets arena to, like, you know, just feel totally, you know, it's just totally awkward. Last week was my first time going in there since the corona hit, because I already had it in my mind that, you know, I'm going to be a free agent this year, and there's really no need for me to go in there. I can get my same weights, you know, out. I can do my same weights, you know, without going in there. I can do my same basketball workouts without going in there and bothering nobody. So it's just like, why not do that and stay to myself? And that's why I kind of went with it. But I feel like it's just so crazy right now just because of the fact that it's corona. You know, the NBA is doing something that we've never done. Right now we're in a bubble, like, just to finish the season. So it's like, it's kind of weird. We already been off for like 2 or 3 months. And then, you know, on top of that, you got to wait on free agency. So I feel like whenever the season ends, that's when we'll jump it to free agency. But it's going to be a weird free agency for not just me, but everybody.
Yeah, anybody who's in. You know, it's been an interesting time with Charlotte. And let's rewind a little bit, because I want to talk about how you got into basketball. So we've talked about your mom a couple of times now, and we want to hear your perspective of your childhood and what basketball meant to you during uncertain times in your life. But Kurt and I were talking before you jumped on, and we were just kind of like marveling at the different backgrounds that NBA players that we've interviewed have come from. You know, you have a handful of them that are from the traditional middle class, really stable families. And then there's a bunch of you that really had tumultuous childhoods. And basketball, the fact that you were able to be uplifted by family and faith and make it in the NBA is a miracle, because some of the people that you would have grown up with probably didn't make it off the streets, right? Is that a fair thing to say? I want to hear from your perspective, like, how much did your socioeconomic position as a kid impact the drive that you had or the hunger that you had to be the best that you could be at this sport?
I mean, it was definitely difficult where I'm from. And on top of that, it's like most people wouldn't even know where I'm from if I don't say the name. So it's just like, it used to be so difficult. Anytime I go out of the state and people, you know, would be like, well, where are you from? It's just like, I say Lakeland, Florida. I got so tired of saying Lakeland, Florida, and people saying like, where is that? I just started saying like Orlando.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not that I'm disclaiming where I'm from. I love where I'm from. It molded me so much, but it was very difficult. I grew up, you know, I wouldn't say I was a demon child, and, you know, I did all these bad things, but, you know, I had some rough patches throughout my childhood. Me and my brothers and sisters all stayed with my mother. And throughout, you know, pretty much our whole childhood, she was a single mother doing everything on her own for a while. So it's just like looking at her try to raise 5 of us all by herself. It kind of like, you know, let me just try to take some of the pain off her. So by like 10th grade, I was like, you know, asked her, can I leave? I end up going to IMG. That didn't work out. So then I end up going to Oak Hill. So to me, it's like I've been molded so long, and you know, been preparing for my life, you know, for this moment for so long. It's just like, gosh, when you finally get here and you finally go through it, and then you look back on what you did, it's like, damn, like, how did I make it? And no doubt, I wouldn't have made all this happen without my mom just being in my corner and me just seeing how, you know, strong she was with five kids by herself. It was just, it was insane. And you know, not only me did I have a rough patch, my sister had a rough patch, my younger brother had a rough patch. You know, my brothers have been to jail. So it's just like you're going through so much. Every time you look right, you look left, you know, one of us are probably into something, you know, back then. So it's just like, and she had to find a way to just, you know, stick it through, help us out. She always was there, never left us for dry. So it's just like, when I look back on it now, it's like, man, we've been through so much to get to this point, and we still gotta, you know, so much more to go, so much more to do, so much more life to live. So it's just like, I look at it as a major blessing.
You know, you mentioned IMG and the struggle that you had to find the right fit for high school. Will you talk a little bit more about that? Dig into that a little bit more for us.
Well, yeah, I decided to go to IMG my 10th grade year with my best friend, Corey Sanders, who's now playing overseas. But we decided to go to IMG together. And then, you know, in the middle of going to IMG together, he ended up leaving, like, right before the season. And I'm a guy, like, I'm so big on loyalty, just because I feel like that takes you a long way, that gets you a long way, just being loyal to people. So, you know, I had already told the coach that I'm here, you know, I want to play here. So I end up staying. Corey end up leaving this, but it's like, man, so that during that 10th thing, my 11th grade year, actually. During that year, I had to switch my positions. I ended up going to point guard where I had to control the offense. So it's like all my numbers are going down. It's like, and then on top of that, we didn't play that many games. It was like when IMG first, you know, jumped off, we didn't play that many games. So I'm like, man, like, what is the point of me coming here? I can't handle play a national schedule. And then, you know, obviously we haven't been doing that. So it's like, I get frustrated. So like, as soon as the season's over, I go home. Like, after the basketball season at IMG, I go back to my mom's house. I stay there. And then I end up going to Oak Hill my senior year after, you know, amazing summer. I end up going to Oak Hill. And, you know, I had the best time of my life at Oak Hill. My mom dropped me off at Oak Hill. And it's like, once she dropped me off, I never looked back. And she could have swore I was going to call, like, I want to go home. But it's just like, I stuck it out. And I never looked back.
When you think Oak Hill, I mean, you think basketball greatness, man. Melo, Josh Smith, Stackhouse, just the legends that have come through there. So, you know, you got there and you essentially had to start from scratch again, but you just said it was such a good time. And, you know, I was just looking at all the highlights from Oak Hill. It looked like a lot of fun, man. And how did that transition to McDonald's All-American? How did you end up selecting FSU? What did Oak Hill do for you in order to get, you know, noticed on the national scale?
Man, Oak Hill made me fall in love with the game, honestly. I got to Oak Hill, and I had already liked the sports because I was a big sport guy. I had already liked the sport. But going to Oak Hill honestly made me fall in love with the game because all you could do there was play basketball.
It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, in the middle of nowhere. So it's like all you can do was get up, grind, get up, grind, get up, grind. You know, I would get up, we would get up 7, go to class, end our classes with practice. And by the time we get out of practice, it's time to, you know, it's time to go back to it. So when we get out of practice, I go home, shower, go eat, and then I end up coming back and playing more basketball with the regular students that was there. So it was just like, it was a nonstop process for me to where, you know, I just fell in love with the game. And then on top of that, we played 50 games. So it's just like every other day you're playing a game. And I just loved it, man. I wouldn't trade that for the, you know, it gave me my first experience of traveling far, you know, seeing different things, you know, just all type of stuff. It just helped me so much. And I couldn't have did it, you know, without you know, Coach Smith and the coaching staff that's there.
Exactly. And that led you to FSU and obviously the success there. I mean, first tournament appearance in 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I went to FSU, and it was a crazy story. I committed to FSU before I even started my season at Oak Hill. I was like, fuck it, you know, I know where I want to go. I told my mom this. So when I took two visits. I took my first visit to USC and Cali, and then I came back and went to Florida State. And on my visit at Florida State, I just like, fuck it, you know, I want to be here.
East Coast, man.
Yeah, this is where I want to play. So I committed to Florida State. But as I played at Oak Hill, I started to get like more buzz moving up in the rankings. I went from like 40. When I first got to Oak Hill, I was ranked 40. I left Oak Hill like ranked 14 or something. So it's like I started like, you know, like playing very well. And Kansas called Coach Smith. And he was like, man, you know, if I call Coach Seth right now, he'll take you. And I was like, man, I kind of want to decommit. So I called Florida State coaches and did it respectfully. I was like, you know, yo, I'm going to decommit. They flew out there the next morning and just they talked to me for about an hour and 30, 40 minutes. And it's just like, I was like, wow. Okay, I'm just staying.
Talk about someone wanting you, man.
Yeah, it was just like, I'm going to stay here with y'all.
And then, you know, you fast forward, you get there, you make an impact, first year, second year, both amazing years. I was watching a video that your mom had sent through about draft night and just watching you, you know, the two of you just hugging, tears of joy. At that point, I mean, I'm sure the last few years leading up to draft night had been such a whirlwind. What was that night like for you as far as just, you know, it had finally happened, you know, I'd made it. What did that feel like?
That night was more, it was for me, but I feel like it was more for my mom, man. And that's why, if you could see the video, like as soon as I got back to her, I just cried in her arms just because I've seen what she's been through, let alone what I've been through. Okay, I've been through a couple things, but throughout my whole life, entire life, I've seen her, you know, battle with, you know, guys putting their hands on her, me trying to jump in and stop them, her, you know, losing something, people robbing us. We done had so many, she has had so many obstacles, you know, throughout my life that it just made me like, man, like, I'm just finally glad that, you know, we don't got to do what we've been through no more. It was one Christmas, man. My mom had, you know, went out and had a great amount of gifts for us. One night we go out and we come back to no gifts, like everything just gone, stolen. So it's just like me that night, me crying in her arms. That's just, I could have did that all night. It's just because, fuck it, I deserve it. It's more like I wanted to do this for you. I bust my behind every day. You know, night shift, weight room, everything I could do to get to this point for you. You've been a single mother, and you deserve it. I couldn't do nothing else that night but cry to her, cry her arms, just because she taught me pretty much everything I know. And what she didn't teach me, my dad taught me. But being with her throughout my whole life, she just taught me so much. And I ain't know what else to do that night but cry with her.
You know, you're an amazing son, and honestly, like that goes back to like what we were talking about before, like that she struggled so that you didn't have to, and she protected mm-hmm. you. She was strong for the family, and she protected you guys. And you know, that's a motivator. It's a motivator to want to uplift her and want to repay her for the sacrifices that she made. And, you know, I completely get it. I completely get that feeling of you're more happy in that moment for what it means for her and not really thinking about what it means for you. Yeah, I completely get it. You know, you, after that night, what did you think life was going to look like? So honestly, like if you can go back to 3 years ago, there, I don't know what year, I don't even know what year we're in anymore. 3 years ago, like draft night is over. What did you think life was going to be like for you, Dwayne Bacon, NBA star?
Man, I didn't even know, man. I didn't know what to expect. People from my agency was telling me so many things. Players was telling me so many things. So it was just like, man, I don't know. I don't know what to think. I don't know what to do first. I don't know, you know, it's like you it's like you instantly go from this college player with nothing to, you know, okay, now you got a little money. How do you save it? How do you, you know, when the time is right, how do you invest? It's just like so many things, but it's just like at the end of the day, I made it to the best of the best. I got to where the best of the best, the players in the world make it to from Lakeland, Florida. So it's just like I couldn't lose sight of that, but it's just like I didn't want to get here and just be one of those guys that, you know, get a little money, make it go fast, make it not worth a while. So I kind of tried to live my same life with a little adjustments. And at this point, still to this day, I try to do whatever I can to get the free stuff. So I can have a lot of money saved up for when that time, you know, that I don't have to play this game no more.
A lot of guys, you know, when we're kids, we dream we want to make it to the league. There's just 450 guys in the league. You know, you get there. That in itself is a massive accomplishment, but your story's just starting. Now you get to the league. The most important thing is staying in the league and using this as a platform to grow, grow your portfolio financially, grow yourself as more than just a basketball player. So now 3 years into it, what have you learned from this league, and what can we expect to see from you in the future?
I learned so much from this league, especially from some old guys like, you know, Russ, MJ, him being our owner. And it's one of them, just save till you get enough bread. First contract is not the contract where you want to just buy.
Can't retire on that contract.
No.
You can't retire on this contract. And I perfectly understand that. I was just talking to my financial advisor the other day, and it was just so crazy because he was just telling me, he was like, man, like out of nowhere, he was like, man, you have some great money saved for the position that you was drafted.
And I mean, most guys late second round or second round 40th pick, they don't have much money. I mean, you've definitely put it away, man.
Yeah. He was just like, why you say that? And I was just like, he was just like, man, I know first rounders that don't even have
that broke.
Blood that are broke.
Yeah. He was like, that don't even have what you have in the main. And it's like, and then I look at, and then I, you know, just look around the league, some of the guys I know, it's just like, man, you want to buy the best of the best jewelry. You want to buy the best of the best this.
You and see then guys in the Phantom.
Yeah. It's okay to be in the fashion. Everybody come at me with like, because I heard one guy say, well, damn, bro, you buy all these clothes. And 95% of the time, be honest with y'all, 75% of the clothes that y'all see me wearing, I don't buy.
Yeah,
yeah, so but there's a difference between clothes or driving in a Rolls Royce Phantom.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, everybody want to buy, you know, this car. I haven't bought a car yet. I don't own none of my cars. I don't own them. They're all leased. I'm not, you know, I don't own a house because I don't know where I want to stay. I don't own a car because I don't know what I want. And even if I did know what I want, it's not like I don't want to spend my money on that right now. And as soon as it leads a lot, you know, it's that's just it. You know, you stack your money, you save, you invest in the right things, then, you know, you can watch your money make itself. But, you know, I once I got to league, that's the main focus for me was to just stay level headed, because you can get to this league in your first couple years, see the money that's coming every first and the 15th, and lose your mind. Like, I see a lot of people just lose their mind. Like, you just come from nothing. So it's just like,
people are already living on that next contract that they don't have. Like,
a lot of people do that. Like, you're living off the next contract. Yo, you got to live for right now. Take it a day at a time. And that's just the motto I try to stay after. I move daily. I don't think about you know, next year today. No, I'm thinking about today, tomorrow, you know, and so on and so forth.
Tomorrow's never guaranteed, yeah, man.
And let's be real, not a lot of people, it doesn't matter if you're in the NBA or whatever career, if you end up in a job that gives you good money or money that you've never seen before, not a lot of us have the background to know how to save or how to take care of our finances, or there's nobody around to teach us how to do that. And so it takes a little bit of instinct and a little bit of smarts and good common sense, which, you know, not always is the case. And that's not limited to professional athletes. That can apply to a lot of people that are out there and get a first-time job that pays them a good salary. It's easy to get caught up in that. It's easy to get caught up on all the things that you never had growing up, so I'm going to get them now. And then not really think about how you're going to pay your rent or pay for the next thing once that money runs out. I just want to say, though, too, like, you say 75% of your clothes you don't buy. Listen, you look really good in pretty much everything you wear. So if I had a clothing line, I wouldn't be charging you anything to wear them either.
I appreciate it.
I've never, you get all the league fits cred.
Yeah, those guys, those, I don't know. People hate when I'm on there. They're like, man, y'all love him.
Yeah, we know other guys that are dying to get on there.
We know.
But I mean, when we see you working out in the Lower Merion jersey, I mean, how can it not be credited?
Hey, I'm just trying to pay homage to one of the greats.
Yeah.
You know, talking about the greats, you mentioned it. I mean, you're ready for what's next in your career, but you're rocking the Kobe jersey. The owner of the Hornets is Michael Jordan. What does that mean to you, man?
Man, that means, honestly, man, that means so much to me. When I first, and it's a crazy story, I got in the league and I called my Oak Hill coaches and I was like, you know, I want to be Jordan Brand, you know, cause just because, you know, I'm so into Jordan. They knew that. I've been wearing Jordan since a toddler. And I'm just so into Jordan. So I was like, I want to be a Jordan athlete. So they give me the number of the rep. I called the Oak Hill rep. You know, I want to be a Jordan. Instantly, he told me, well, that might be a problem. They only, you know, take top 15 guys. I said, okay, cool, whatever. Forget it. I ended up getting drafted by the Hornets on draft night. And like 2 days later, they like, Michael wants you to be on Jordan Brand.
Oh my God.
I'm like, it's crazy because I just asked you guys and it was like, nah, I just asked the rep. But it was like, and then the people, but you know, it's two different reps from the high school rep. And then, you know, the NBA rep is two totally different reps. And it was just like, man, Michael wants you to be on here. Michael, you know, requested for you to be Jordan Brand. I said, that's a no brainer for me. And just from there on, I mean, I can text him today. He'll text me back. He's a great voice to listen to, a great voice to talk to. I mean, he's just all ears all the time, and very understanding. As soon as the season was over, I texted him. I like, man, just thank you for everything. And he texted me back, you know, for sure, you're welcome. Man, you have all the tools to play this game. Just keep working. So, you know, I feel like we'll always have that connection because I've been here 3 years. But at the end of the day, I still got to do what's best for me. But idol-wise, that's always going to be, you know, the guy that I look up to. I remember my first time seeing him to this day, our first picture. It's forever going to be with me forever. And no matter what, nobody would ever, you know, just be able to take that away from me. That's something that, you know, I'm going to, you know, die with just because, you know, everybody wanted to be this man. Everybody wanted to, and for me to actually have a relationship with him is enough.
So you walk in the gym today and he checks ball. Who's taking it?
Oh, I'm definitely going to beat him.
That old head got nothing, eh?
Yeah. You know, for those of us who are on the outside looking in and watching you over the last 3 years, I feel, and I don't mean any disrespect, it's just an observation, I feel like you haven't really been played to your best. I think that there's a lot more that you have to offer, and I don't think that it's been taken advantage of your 3 years with the Hornets. And It's interesting that you say that you that the relationship that you have with the great one. He's the greatest in my opinion. He was my Kobe. He's everything. But you know, how much of an influence does he have over the team itself? And
I think he has a lot of influence. But as far as like calling the shots, it's mostly he tried to stay out the way and let the team be ran by the coaches. And I feel like with an owner, I feel like an owner in this sport, that's what you have to do, in a sense, because you don't want to be calling the shots. If that's the case, you might as well be a coach. So I think you hire a coach for him to call the shots, for him to make the right plays, for him to make the right decisions. Honestly, I'm with you. I haven't been played to my right. To my potential. And I don't, you know, one thing about me, I don't get down on it. I don't, you know, beat myself up about it. I just simply work harder. It's not a day that I haven't been in the gym. It's not a day that I won't be in the gym. It's just because I have seen so many other guys go from a team to a team, maybe two teams, three teams, and all of a sudden they just pop. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they wasn't good. It's just the fact that the situations they was in just didn't work for them. A perfect example is Victor Oladipo. He went from Orlando, then he went to the Thunder. And I remember at the Thunder, everybody beat him up. You're not as good as your draft spots say, this and that, whatever. He go to Indiana and boom, he's an all-star. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you feel me? I would be a fool if I sit here and beat myself up. Oh, well, you know, maybe I'm just not good enough to play this game. No, it's not that at all. Everybody see that. The Hornets know I can play this game. Yeah. I've had plenty of games where you can see I can play the game. And I know the world have seen that, but it's just maybe this is not the right fit for me. So
you know your worth, which I think is a wonderful thing. You know your worth, and you understand. And again, it's not criticism. It's really just observing. It's almost like they've forgotten about you. There's times where it's just they forget that they have this amazing player on their roster, and you question, like, what's, like, these are smart people. There's got to be logic. There's got to be something behind it. And, you know, and to me, when you're talking about being a free agent, and it's a little uncertain right now, and because of coronavirus, the timelines are kind of skewed. But I think that this is going to be an opportunity for you to really shop around to find what is the right fit for you, or to go into, you know, use this experience of the last 3 years and what you've learned to really look for something or to come across something that is going to take advantage of your potential as a player. So it's exciting from my perspective.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. I definitely think, you know, once I get to a team, they'll see, you know, well, I mean, and I know the Hornets have seen it.
You've put up massive games. I mean, at the end of the season, you went down to the G, you put up 51. You know, you can flat out ball. People know that. It's always about the right fit. And to your point earlier, as soon as you land in that spot, it's game time. So it's going to be exciting, man. You're in a great position now. You're healthy. You're putting in that work. I mean, free agency is going to do you well.
Yeah, thank you. I trust me, I sit, me and my trainer, we talk about it every day like it's nothing. I put in that work for a reason. And it's no doubt in my mind that, you know, nobody thinks I'm working. They know I'm working.
I was watching I watched all of the Real Me. Love the opening line. Like, just because you don't post about it doesn't mean you ain't in the gym every day. You working.
Yeah.
You perfecting the craft.
Yeah, for sure.
Why was it important for you to tell that story? Why was now the time? You know, a documentary, something like that, usually it's somebody older who's reflecting. You're young.
Yeah,
you're super young. So why was it important?
Honestly, the truth, I'm going to give y'all the truth just because I haven't. I'm not a big guy with the social media. I honestly hate social media. If it wasn't for my job, I wouldn't do social media.
I get it.
And the thing about it is, by the time I'm 35, I want to be off of Instagram, off of Twitter, off of Snapchat, you know, by the time I retire from this game, I just want to be done with social media. I want to be kind of like Kawhi, where nobody knows where I'm at. Nobody knows how to reach me but my family. And that's just that. People get so caught up in Instagram thinking it's real life. And it's simply just not. It's not. And then I get on Instagram and then say I post a picture one day of me in an outfit. All of a sudden, I'm getting so many, you know, threats or, well, bro, you're supposed to be working or you're supposed to be. First of all, it's 24 hours in a day. the picture probably took 5 minutes, you know, out of the 24 hours that's in a day. So on top of that, like, I got so much more time to work out, do what I got to do. And you people sit on there and press me about a 5 minute picture. Hmm. Like, it's simple. Like, you don't have to like it. I ain't ask you to like it. It's not like I'm posting a picture saying, like my picture or share my photo or do this or do that. And it gets so annoying after a while. So, and that wasn't even half of it. It's just like, I was so fed up of people having these assumptions of what I do, how I do it, where I do it. It's just like, man, let's just put this out to show them what I do on a daily basis. That video is 100% authentic. That's what I do most of it every day. I work out, I chill, you know, with my teammates. And some of the times I just go to the studio and make music.
You have it. And honestly, what I don't understand is no matter how long we have social media, people don't get that all of it is the highlight reel. Nobody's putting the shitty things that happen in their lives anywhere on social media. At least not, you know, most people aren't, right? Like, everybody's putting the best picture of them. Everybody's putting the best status that they can think of, or the vacation, or it's a highlight reel of your life. It's not real life. And it blows my mind that people still don't get that. People still don't understand how social media works or what the purpose of it is, or don't know how to take it for what it is. You talk about your music, though. So you just released an album, right?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, I'm a musician. I'm a musician before I'm anything involved in athletics. So this is my space. Why don't we talk about that a little bit? What was your inspiration? What made you decide that? Have you written for a long time? Have you been creating music for a long time? What inspired this?
Yeah, I've probably been making music since about what? We were in like sixth grade, we started making music. Like, wow. I got old stuff on YouTube, like from sixth grade, 2013, 2012 type stuff, like on YouTube where I was making music then. It's just like, that's like one of my top passions. If they told me to pick three things I could do for the rest of my life, it would probably play basketball, music, make clothes. And that's like ties my kids and stuff like that. But music is like, it's like I need it. My teammates will tell you, Devontae, Miles, they'll tell you, man, like, I will blast music all day. It's a simple fact that it keeps me at peace. Like,
I completely get what music means to you. Honestly, like, to me, music is the lifeline of everything. It's what motivates me. It's what picks me up. It's not what I do for a living, but it's what fuels everything else that I do in the course of a day, or the course of direction of my life.
Like, I need it.
Right? Like, people.
Yeah, that's.
Like, to me, like, if I hear a song, like, music to me is the biggest instigator of memory. Like, when I was a kid, I would make mixtapes at the end of each year, or mix CDs eventually. And like, it would be like all the songs that remind me of like key things that happened in my life in that year. And it would be like a collection of like 12 songs at the end of each year. And I go back and I listen to those I remember exactly what I felt like, and I remember exactly what was happening. And yeah, you don't have to have a career in it to have it fuel and motivate you. But you're just awfully lucky that you get to have a career in sports that you love, and then you also get to make music too. And I was going to ask you about a fashion line, and I think you did cut out a little bit, but I think somewhere in there, the third thing that you would have been doing is creating a fashion line. So do you have any plans to do that?
I actually have a fashion line. I just don't put my name on it.
Really? What is it? Can we talk about that?
My fashion line is called Bad Section. It's Instagram if you type in just Bad Section. And it was like
the whole world's not gonna know. The world's not gonna know because you cut out again. So we still don't know what the name of your fashion line is. Do you mind repeating that for us? Because you cut out again.
The Instagram name is Bad Section. Bad Dot Section. And I mean, you'll find a lot of pictures on the page of me and stuff that I haven't even released. And it's so crazy that I've been doing this fashion line for like a year now, something like that. And nobody knows that I'm behind. They just see me wear it sometimes.
That's amazing.
And that's kind of where I want to be with it. I don't want people to just, oh, well, you too busy on this, because everybody make assumptions out of everything. And it's not like I care. It's just like I don't even have time for it. I don't want to be in the middle of it. It's just like I like to stay to myself and do what I can to make my people happy.
So, Dwayne, I know you got practice or your training coming up. We'll wrap up. From the outside looking in, are you going to be cheering on any teams in the bubble?
Probably not any teams, but definitely cheering for my guy.
Who's your guy?
John Isaac. He's back from an injury. We went to college together at Florida State. And that's my boy, so I'm excited to see him play again. I'm definitely excited to see Kimba play again. That's my guy.
Whoa. I'm sure you miss him.
Yeah. I talk to him a lot, actually. Me and Kimba relationship probably hasn't changed. We talk a lot still. Man, he's
a dog.
He's probably the most genuine person I ever probably met in my life. Just a great guy. Talk to me about different situations. I also got a point of view from him on the free agency stuff too. So, and he was just telling me some things. So, I'm excited for free agency. I'm excited to see, my guys play. And I can't wait to, for me to get back on the team with a team. I mean, get back on the court with a team.
Yeah, we can't either.
Us too. All right. So we just have a few questions that we like to finish off with, all of our guests. They're just some fun and, don't think too hard. But the first thing that comes to mind. So the first one is, if you were to write your autobiography today, what would you call it?
Life Matters.
Life Matters. I like that. Okay. And if there was going to be a movie made on it, who would play you? Yeah. Who would you want to play you?
Like anybody?
Anybody. Dead, alive, anybody. Which actor would play you?
Oh, actor. Okay. I would want Will Smith to play me.
Excellent. And if there's any TV show, either in the past or present, that's most like your life, what one would it be?
Most like my life. Oh. I don't know. Proud Family.
Proud Family. Oh, that's a really good answer.
That's what's up. Dwayne, man, we appreciate you coming on. We've had a lot of fun today, man. Time is money, and we appreciate you making the time to come on, man.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all.
And when this coronavirus is, pray for it that we have a vaccine, we can move. We definitely got to get you up to Canada one of these days, man. Maybe run a camp out here, but we got a lot of fans.
We'd love to have up here.
So, yes, sir. Appreciate you both.
All the best for free agency, man. Get it.
Can't wait to see what happens next, Dwayne.
Thank you.